This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Steppenwolf Theater, the acclaimed Chicago company, is celebrating its 25th anniversary this season. And as President Clinton said when giving the company a National Medal of the Arts, Steppenwolf stages edgy, experimental productions that still manage to attract mainstream audiences. It's an ensemble company that shuns the star system, and yet it has launched its fair share of stars. Among the company's best-known alumni are John Malkovich, John Mahoney, Laurie Metcalf, and Joan Allen. Today we'll hear from four of the stars who were shaped by their experiences with Steppenwolf. We'll start with two of the three founders of the company, Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney. Sinise is the co-star of such films as Mission to Mars, The Green Mile, Apollo 13, and Forrest Gump. Terry Kinney stars in the HBO prison series Oz as a prison administrator. He was also a regular on 30-something. Gary Sinise went to high school with the company's third founder, Jeff Perry. Perry met Terry Kinney in college. Their first productions were staged in a Unitarian church, but in 1976, when the company grew to 9 members, they moved to the basement of a Catholic school in Highland Park. I asked Gary Sinise if there was anyone in the audience when they started.
There were nights where people came, and there were nights where people didn't come. You know, we actually really did, in the beginning, have to do a lot of selling of ourselves to try to get an audience. Here you got these, you know, college graduates and college folks that come and are down in this basement of a Catholic school, and how are you going to get people to come? Well, we did have, in the early days, we did have a man who was helping us with business and trying to sell subscriptions, and I think maybe we sold 50 subscriptions or 100 subscriptions, maybe at the most in the first couple years. But we would do all kinds of things to try to get audiences in there. We'd walk in parades, and we had bake sales, and try to have, you know, benefits. And, you know, in the beginning it was sort of a cool novelty. What's going on down there? There's these guys that are beating each other up in this basement, you know. you can get in and watch it for $3. Let's go, you know. And so it was kind of an interesting novelty. But as the winter months came along, we started to go into, serious audience emptiness. And I remember there was one show we did called Look, We've Come Through, and I think for that particular show, I remember we did a performance, I think, for maybe 2 people and out of 88 seats. And there were times where we just didn't have much of an audience, but, you know, after a while, we started getting reviewed by the Chicago Tribune, and some of the Chicago papers started coming out and watching us, and we started to actually build an audience, build one to the point where it became clear that it was time to move into the city.
Terry, when Gary was talking about how people would come to watch people beating each other up in the Steppenwolf company, what did he mean by that?
Well, I mean, one of the theater rules that we completely ignored was stage violence, with the quotation marks around staged. We tended, when there was violence on stage, and there quite often was in our plays, we found these one acts that we like to call now the axe murderer plays. It was Indian Wants the Bronx, plays by Leonard Melfi and Lanford Wilson, and, you know, very bleak early 70s plays. And we liked these plays a lot because they offered great roles for our actors, but there was usually some kind of violence and despair going on. And in it was one of our first 4 plays, Indian Wants the Bronx, Gary and I beat up our artistic director at the time, H.E. Backus. He played the Indian, with a lot of makeup, by the way. We just beat him to a pulp. I mean, we didn't really mean to. We really loved the guy. But we did it to each other as well. And the audience truly felt they were in danger sometimes, because we would almost spill into the audience quite often. And we spent an hour before the show, while the other one act before us was running, improvising about 100 yards away, where there was this young kid that liked to hang out at our theater named Michael Unger. And he used to let us chase him around with knives in the neighborhood, etc. We would pretend to vandalize the neighborhood. We didn't really vandalize anything, but we became these kids. We just had a lot of fun playing. And the stage manager would open the back door to the theater and wave at us when it was time for the stage lights to come up, and we would sprint that 100 yards straight onto the stage. And it was, you know, a lot of fun. But we were so into it that we really did hit each other when we had to hit each other. We've learned to stop that now in our old age.
Why did you want to go so far as to actually hitting each other on stage as opposed to faking it theatrically?
Well, because we hated fake theatrical stuff. I mean, one of the reactions, the really visceral reactions we had as a group to seeing the theater that we were seeing in Chicago was the phoniness of it. And, you know, not to disparage anyone's work, but at the time we were extremely cocky, you know, narcissistic youths, and we really felt that we could take it to another level, realism and hyper-realism. And so we tried to introduce this sort of filmic dynamic in the technical end, and we also tried to introduce a kind of a realism that we didn't feel people had seen.
I think, too, there was something that was really developing between the nine of us in the early days that was a lot about trust. And that, you know, we were smart enough not to do each other real damage on stage, but also, you know, we knew how to hit each other, how to punch each other, where it's not going to make the guy go to the hospital either, you know. And there was something about just the trust that was going on between us that was very, very important, and that you could trust somebody to be in control of themselves on stage enough that they could make it look really good, but that you weren't going to get, you know, seriously injured or something like that. We did have our cuts and bruises, but in fact, there was one night I closed a knife on my finger and had to get four or five stitches after the play. The play went on, and I just wrapped my finger up in some dirty newspaper that was laying on the ground and carried on with the play. So we got a little crazy, but we also really trusted each other on stage, and that was an important ingredient. You can't just have actors go wild without any sense of what's going on out there. And we always did have a good sense of how far we could go and what we could do and how far we could push each other.
In those early days, when there were times when no one showed up or a couple of people showed up, would the show go on anyways? And if it did, would you put as much into it as if it were a full house?
Yeah, absolutely we did. The show always went on if they wanted it to. I remember we did a musical, and it was a big mistake. It was called Mac Anything Goes Over the Rainbow, which was music by Harold Arlen, Kurt Vile, and who's the third one, Gary?
Cole Porter.
And Cole Porter, I'm sorry. So it was a sort of a cabaret show in which, again, the artistic director, Ichibakis, felt that it would be interesting to have non-singers singing these songs because they were, you know, they were songs to be acted. And we acted them badly. We sang them badly in gray turtlenecks and black turtlenecks and gray pants, polyester pants. They all matched, and it was a bad idea.
From Kmart, by the way.
From Kmart, and they were quite inexpensive. We had a budget, as somebody said, a budget in the tens of dollars back then. One night there were two people there sitting in the audience, an elderly couple, and we were all peeking around the curtain saying, oh, gosh, I hope they stay, and, you know, I wonder if anyone else will show up, but no one did. So we went out. We walked out on stage, and we said, well, you're the only people here. Would it embarrass you to have us do the show? And they said, oh, gosh, no, it's like a command performance. We'd be pleased to have you do your show. So we did it. I mean, we did it full throttle because these two very grateful people were sitting out there beaming at us the entire time.
Did you get a standing ovation?
No, I don't believe so. I think they just sat and clapped at the end.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much. Good luck to you kids.
My guests are Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, two of the three founding members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, two of the three founders of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago, and Steppenwolf is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Terry, so when Steppenwolf got together and there were nine players, were you all about the same age?
Yeah, we were basically all the same age. We had mostly just graduated. We were in the range of 22, 23 years old, all of us.
So did you have to impersonate older people if there were older people in your show?
Oh, yeah. We were the world's worst makeup artists, but we played all varieties of age. I remember I did, well, it was not in the first year, but when I played the King in Exit the King,
yeah,
I did the worst makeup you've ever seen in your life. I mean, we drew lines on our foreheads and, made jowls with eyebrow pencils and, kind of rubbed dark stuff on our eyelids and stippled on things, to make our skin look older and talked in old voices.
Did it ever occur to you to invite actors who were older into the company?
Never.
No.
Why not?
Well, we lived in a vacuum in a way. We didn't know anybody except each other. Most of us worked in the same areas in the daytime so that we could support ourselves. Most of us worked at this mall called Northbrook Court Mall, which I understand is quite a booming, successful mall now. Well, at the time, it was like a ghost town. And Gary worked on a loading dock there at Neiman Marcus. And I worked at a clothing store, and Jeff Perry worked in an egg roll factory of some kind. And, the other people were kind of spread around there doing office jobs, et cetera. And at night, we built sets, and we rehearsed. And we built the theater when we first started by night before we would rehearse. And we just didn't know how to ask anybody to be in a play, not for a few years at least. In 1978, we did invite someone to come play Amanda Wingfield for us, who was a local Highland Park woman who did a remarkable job in the play. But that was the first time we had gone outside.
Steppenwolf was, especially in the early days, it's probably fair to say, a very close-knit company, and very much like a family, though often probably very much like a dysfunctional family. And I think, actors had affairs with each other. Some actors married each other within the company. Is it possible to know the people you're working with too well, so well that it might interfere with your ability to act with each other, to really become different people with each other?
Gary and I talked about this earlier today, actually. We could do a major expose of all the affairs in the company. Well, again, we were a group of people living in a town which was a suburb of Chicago. So it was mostly people older than us and settled and married with children, and then high school kids and grade school kids. So nobody of post-college age. That being said, we all became embroiled in many, many ways. There were lots of switching of relationships and broken hearts and friendships that needed to sort of like mend for a long time. Somehow, we always got the work on stage to, I guess I would have to say, transcend that. Maybe it was because of it that there was such energy on stage, but there was always a great deal of loyalty to the cause, which was to put on this great theater and hopefully have somebody recognize the fact that we were doing great theater. So no matter how we felt personally, there was always a lot of peer pressure to get over it and move on. We did that. We feuded, and our company meetings were the most remarkably dysfunctional thing you could ever see. Screaming and yelling, and we even had the police show up once. because it was, we, we, we got along in these groups. We were like a tribe of cave people, but somehow we would get on stage and the space between the actors would always be full.
I think the company wanted to be very non-hierarchical. How much power does a director have in a company that's trying to not have any hierarchies? Does it inhibit the ability of the director to direct?
That was always something very clear in our company, that there were leader figures, people with ideas, people with plays to bring in and direct, people with administrative ideas, and there were people that acted in plays. There was always friction about, who should have power and who does have power, et cetera, in the company meeting situation. But the leader figures always remained the leader figures. And there was never any proletariat that was very real. There was a hierarchy.
Terry, you once resigned in protest or in anger. I'm not sure what the circumstances were. And then you decided you wanted to go back into the Steppenwolf company, and the members of the company had to vote to decide whether to let you come back. What was that about? Why did you resign, and then why did you decide you wanted to come back in?
Oh, gosh, who have you been talking to?
Wasn't me.
No. Well, I think I resigned over the fact that I was breaking up with a girl. I was very upset, and the current executive director, we had so many that we considered doing a benefit where we chained them all together and paraded them across the front of the stage. the current guy had this plan where we would clean out an entire crawl space of all the stuff that was in there, and it was in there before we ever came into this church basement. Clean it out, and then assign bathroom duties, and I think I got assigned the first bathroom duty, and I said, well, I'll clean the toilet every day, but not by assignment. This was where the proletariat was important to me. And I think I quit in protest, but it was probably some personal problem that I was having. I left for a while, and then I missed everybody, and my friends missed me. When I came back, somebody decided that there should be a company meeting, just to make it official, since I had left the company, that I should, be brought in by vote.
Gary, were you at that meeting?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I was shocked, and I had to wait upstairs, but I also felt it was kind of right, it had been a while, it had been about 3 or 4 months. So I waited upstairs with a friend, and an hour passed, and then 2 hours passed, and I started to become very concerned about, what are they talking about? Are they evaluating all of my, personality traits, or what are they doing? Am I not a real company member? And I started really doubting that they were going to let me back in. And in reality, they were talking about a number of things, I heard later. Gary can talk to that. But the next thing I heard was a loud scream. Now, I mentioned a while ago that the police had come to a company meeting. This was the one. I heard someone screaming, and I didn't know what it was. I ran down the stairs, and the door to the theater was open, and no one was in there. So I ran outside, and they were all holding down. It was Moira. It was Gary's wife. She was upset about some other things as well, but she couldn't believe that they were talking about this. She, on my behalf, was very upset. I've always been grateful for that. And she was screaming bloody murder, and the police kind of showed up, and we got rid of them. And then somebody turned to me in the middle of the fray and said, "Oh, you're in. You're back."
That kind of settled that.
Yeah, that was that.
Gary, why did it take so long to decide whether Terry Kinney should be allowed back in the theater that he co-founded?
It's a long time ago, and I can't remember all the details of the meeting.
Senator.
But we had never, we'd never faced this kind of thing before. So I assume we were yelling at each other about the principle of, going off. Mm-hmm. And we leaving and how that should affect the group. And I remember shortly after that, you know, Malkovich went off and did a play with some other company, and that was the first time that had happened, and we had to have a big meeting about that. You know, we had meetings all the time because we had to discuss, you know, what it was we were doing, and if we're going to be a theater, then we're going to all work together, and this is what we're going to do, and we're not going to do anything else, and, you know, yelling at each other about that kind of stuff. And that was the first time Terry quit.
Yeah, there'd been another, I quit another time as well.
I can't remember what that one was about, but it might have been about a girl. I don't know.
It could have been. It could have, yeah. I mean, there was always that.
Yeah. Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney are two of the three founding members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. This is Steppenwolf's 25th anniversary season. Sinise and Kinney will be back in the second half of the show. This is Fresh Air.